Hello, everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcherless podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. I'm your host, Jake Mache. I also have a co-host in the room here, Rick Hake. He's waving to the camera. Make sure to subscribe, of course, to the Pitcherless Podcast Network and leave us a rating and review if you do so choose. You can follow the On the Farm podcast at PL On the Farm on Twitter, as well as Rick at Must Be the Hawk and myself at Jake Mache. You can send us any questions that you have that we could look into in a future episode. But for this week, today, we are continuing the third of our three-part series on the MLB mock draft, where we break down the first round of the upcoming MLB amateur first-year player draft, the thing that happens at the All-Star break. And we're going to give our thoughts on where we think the top draft prospects will go and how they will fit in their new organizations. We're also going to give a quick update of the NCAA baseball tournament, which is currently in the middle of the College World Series as we are recording today on Tuesday night, and talk a little bit about what has happened, what's happening, and what might happen going forward. Rick, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Jake. Happy to be here. Happy to be talking all things baseball, college baseball, as well as the final episode. So sad to see it go. The final episode of our mock draft, our PL On the Farm mock draft. But you know what, guys? Don't be too sad. We're getting close to the MLB draft. You'll get the real results, and you'll be able to go from there. I hope that you guys did enjoy this. It's a lot of fun being able to look at this stuff. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun looking up all this stuff and being able to kind of talk back and forth with Jake about this and see where we think. And I've had some people reach out. Shout out to Dodger Dave Dutton, a good friend of mine, reached out to me, and he said that he was pretty thrilled about these episodes. So I hope you are too.
Incredible. Love that, Dodger Dave. Thank you.
Yes.
Very nice. Yeah, this has been a ton of fun. Rick is also just killing it in general, giving us all this information, doing the majority of the work. I say the fun little words on the mic. And I mean, this is just it's really fun. It reminds you of the excitement of the draft that happens and kind of gets you pumped and prepared for everything that can happen. Because the baseball draft, the MLB draft, is deep. It's not quite like other, professional drafts. And it's very easy to not know what the heck is going on after the first half of the first round. And so it's nice to kind of refamiliarize yourself with, the top prospects, guys you kind of heard about in passing over the last year or so, as well as, just learning some new names that you'll kind of be able to be familiar with when their name comes up on the screen when watching the draft. So really awesome stuff that we've had a ton of fun doing. So hopefully it is enjoyed by everyone else as well. Before we get into that, before we finish up the coverage for the MLB mock draft, we'll give an update real quick on what's happening in the College World Series, as we've been doing as well during these episodes. The Super Regionals were super interesting, if you will. It was, chaos. We talked about how more teams than usual were upsets, out of the first regional round, and how there was, just a ton of unranked teams that were in the super regionals, and how that, definitely not like what we have seen in years past. But then, all the better teams won for the most part in the super regionals. Out of the hosts, I mean, it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 of the 8 hosts won, which is right in line a little bit more than what we've seen in the past. On average, it's about 70% on average win. The hosts, 70% of the hosts win, and we saw about 75% of them win. So that's more right in line with what we have seen, less upsets. And then, as we've also seen in the College World Series, the cream rises, to the top, and these, ultimate teams are really kind of taking over and just showing why they are the best ranked teams in the country. And another interesting thing that kind of came out of the Super Regional round was that it was the first time in the 8-team era of the College World Series that only 2 conferences were represented. That, of course, being the SEC and the ACC. I bet if I gave anyone a guess of which two conferences they were, that would probably be the answer, as they have been dominating the rankings all season, dominating just each other in the conference. They've been super competitive. And here they are, you know, at the highest stage, battling it out. Both conferences brought four, which also is the record for the most teams a single conference has brought to the College World Series. So it's a two-horse race in that sense. And now, as it currently stands, there are five teams left in consideration. Only one is from the ACC. So the SEC even is, again, showing why it is the best conference. Rick, any thoughts on the lack of parity? I can't remember what parity means. The best team's doing better.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty insane. But I mean, this is what we've kind of come to see here recently in recent years. And I think it just speaks to the level of talent also that's in the college game right now. You know, several years post COVID, you know, we're getting a lot of these, you know, teams that are rolling out seniors. I know the Clemson team was strong seniors, and same with Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. So we're seeing a lot of these teams that are, you know, 4 year, 5 year seniors out there playing. So, you know, I think it's a great time for college baseball and for everybody to be watching. So if you haven't watched it to this point, this is a great time and a great opportunity to be able to go out there and start watching some of this. It's really interesting, man. I'm very curious to see where this all goes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just to kind of do a breakdown real quick, a review of how those Super Regionals went. Number one, Tennessee beat Evanston in three games. Evanston was one of two teams that was able to push a series of three games. So huge props to Evanston. They had a fantastic tournament. Florida State, number nine, beat UConn in two games. Virginia, 12, beat Kansas State in two. North Carolina, 4, beat West Virginia in two games. Number two, Kentucky beat Oregon State in two games. Very sad about that. And then NC State pulled off another upset, 10th ranked versus 7th ranked Georgia in three games. Good series there. And then Florida, the other upset, the other team that beat the host team, beat number six Clemson in two games as well. Three games. That one went to three. And then Texas A&M, of course, took care of Oregon. So you have the four-team bracket in Tennessee, Florida State, Virginia, and UNC. And then the other bracket was Kentucky, NC State, Texas A&M, and Florida. And it's been pretty chalky so far. Florida is still alive, which is super cool. The only unranked team in the College World Series, and they will be playing Kentucky for their lives tomorrow morning on Wednesday. And then the winner will have to beat Texas A&M twice. Texas A&M is the only team left in the entire tournament that has yet to lose in the tournament. So they've been playing incredibly. Not even Tennessee can say that. And they are also a fantastic team. And then the other matchup is set, Tennessee versus FSU. FSU has to beat Tennessee twice. First game is played Wednesday as well. And I'm really excited to see how this goes, because Tennessee and FSU played maybe the best game of the whole tournament so far. When they met earlier in this bracket, Tennessee was down 9-4 in the fourth inning. They battled back over the course of the rest of the game and then scored four runs in the bottom of the ninth to win 12-11. So FSU can, you know, if they don't blow leads, they can, you know, they've proven they could stay in the fight against Tennessee. They just knocked off the fourth ranked team in North Carolina. So I think that hopefully I'm hoping that FSU can win the first one, so we have like a do or die game. I think that'd be interesting. Texas A&M, you'd just be a fool to root against them at this point. It seems that Tennessee and Texas A&M are in a, you know, destined clash of SEC titans in the final of the College World Series, which would be interesting. It is a little sad as a casual fan who enjoys a bit more chaos and upsets and Cinderellas, but it is also maybe the two best teams in the country duking it out, which is also fantastic for a competitive watchability standpoint as well. So yeah, that will be happening. College World Series finals Saturday the 22nd, Sunday the 23rd, and then Monday the 24th. So tune into that. If you haven't watched it at all, that's probably the thing that you want to go and check out, because there's going to be a lot of really incredible athletes, top draft picks that'll be competing, and just guys just laying it all out there, you know, playing maybe their last baseball games ever. And so it's always just something else there to go and check out.
Something so, I saw, Jake.
Yeah.
Also, just to cut in here with Jack Caglione. Yeah. You know, he's been pitching a lot throughout this, you know, obviously the season and going into the postseason here. But I saw that he was kind of rubbing his forearm a little bit the other day after pitching. So there's a little bit of worry that maybe he might be dealing with a little bit of something there. Though it has not been announced, he did end up crushing a massive home run, so he could still do that. But just something to kind of keep in mind. I'm sure a lot of teams might be keeping that in mind here in the next couple weeks. So, you know, as we get to the end of our mock draft and Caglione went relatively high in our mock, you know, we might be seeing something a little bit different here sooner rather than later if we hear any sort of further news on that. But I watched the video of him in the dugout, you know, talking to his coaches and rubbing his forearm. So just keep that in mind. Just a little side note I saw today.
Right. Yeah, that's tough. And yeah, really tough, especially just also for someone who is trying to hit both hit and pitch. If it's a serious injury, it might be, you know, the kind of finishing part of his pitching, you know, because it'd be tough to come back from one of those really long strenuous surgeries and then pitch, you know, after kind of already being, it's already kind of assumed that he would drop that eventually. I think it'd be tough to come back from a surgery and kind of build up just to eventually maybe give it up anyway. So that'll definitely be something to watch. That would really suck if that's how it happens. Because you really want to see him at least compete, you know, in the professional level and try to do it as we've seen some other guys be able to do at least. So really hoping that's not a serious thing for him and he can continue to pitch really until it doesn't make sense as a player, as a performer, rather than kind of medically.
Yeah, and I mean, no doubt he is better with the bat far and away than what he is pitching, but you kind of hope that he can do it. What would be very sad is if, you know, he ended up falling kind of, you know, falling in the draft. If he fell the second, you know, or even the third round because medicals aren't coming back right. We saw this happen with Kumar, you know, several years back, and I would just hate that for him because this is a guy that, you know, if Conda didn't break his record from the year prior, you know, he's hit a well over 60 home runs in two seasons. I mean, he deserves to be in the first round. And if, you know, these guys are kind of concerned about his medical records and he has to get Tommy John, you know, after, which I'm not saying that that's what has already been decided. But if that is the case, I mean, we're seeing position players come back, you know, in what, six to 8 months, I think is what it is. Whereas pitchers is pitchers are closer to like 12 to 14 months. So yeah, what does that mean? Where does he fall? You know, I don't know. It's just it's very interesting news. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I saw that and I thought about it. I was like, that's something we need to talk about right here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely glad you brought it up because man, that could impact the draft in a huge way for sure. So that does it for the review of the College World Series that is currently happening. And we will break down what happens over the weekend for our next episode. And at that point, then discuss the national champion and how that has shaken out there. Rick, if you had to pick a team, I'll put you on the spot right here, just off vibes, complete vibes. Tennessee, FSU, Texas A&M, Kentucky, or Florida?
My gut tells me that it's going to be Texas A&M. But I'm telling you, man, Florida is just playing with veracity out there, man. Like I love it. It would not surprise me if Florida wins, gets all the way there and wins it. But Texas A&M, wow. Wow, I think I'm going to go Texas A&M.
Yo, that's a fair pick. That's a fair pick. I think I'll go Tennessee just because I've been bandwagoning them more or less for a little bit here, but Texas A&M, they've looked just untouchable. It's awesome. That'll do it for the NCAA tournament review here. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick ad break and then we're going to come back and we're going to dive into the final 10 picks of the first round of our P PL on the farm MLB mock draft. Stick with us after the break. All right, and we are back and ready to finish up the mock draft for the MLB draft that is upcoming. And so I'll go over the first 20 picks that we have so far, so y'all are aware of the players that we have already distributed to teams in the mock draft. And then we'll dive into the 21st overall selection from the Twins all the way through to the 30th overall selection by the reigning World Series champions, the Texas Rangers. So at first overall, we had Charlie Condon from Georgia going to the Guardians, then Chase Burns of Wake Forest going to the Reds, Hagen Smith of Arkansas going to the Rockies, Jack Caglione, the first baseman and pitcher for Florida, going to the Athletics, Braden Montgomery, outfielder, Texas A&M, going to the White Sox, Travis Bazana, second baseman, Oregon State, going to the Royals, Nick Kurtz, first baseman, Wake Forest, to the Cardinals, J.J. Weatherholt, middle infielder, West Virginia, to the Angels, Vance Honeycutt, outfielder, North Carolina, to the Pirates, Treya Savage, right-handed pitcher, East Carolina, to the Nationals, Connor Griffin, shortstop, outfielder from high school, the Detroit Tigers, Ryan Johnson, right-handed pitcher, out of Dallas Baptist, to the Red Sox, James Tibbs, outfielder, Florida State, to the Giants, William Schmidt, right-handed pitcher out of high school, to the Cubs, Cam Caminiti, left-handed pitcher out of high school, to the Mariners, Bryce Rayner, shortstop out of high school, to the Marlins, Brody Barrett, right-handed pitcher out of Iowa, go Hawks, to the Brewers, Ryan Sloan, right-handed pitcher out of high school, to the Rays, Christian Moore, second baseman out of Tennessee, to the Mets, and then Tommy Tanks, third baseman from LSU, going to the Blue Jays. Hell of a first 20 picks. A lot of fantastic players, really interesting profiles going there. Now we move on to the 21st overall selection by the Minnesota Twins, theoretically on the clock. Rick, where are they going?
All right. So their whole team is coming together really nicely here. But whenever I look at this, obviously Royce Lewis is doing a fantastic job. He might be the reason why this just does not work out, this pick at all. So I'll probably end up eating my words on this, but I'm going to stick with what I did because in my mind it made sense at the time. Cam Smith out of Florida State, third baseman. Now, this is a prospect that they can either go first base, they can go third base, they can move him around. He's got some size to him, and I think that this could be a very solid selection. Standing at 6'3", 224 pounds, Smith has the build for power at third base, but has not fully tapped into his raw power. This year, in 62 games at Florida State, he slashed .402, .497, .677 with 16 home runs, 20 doubles, 79 runs scored, 56 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. All this in 254 at-bats. He struck out just 17.3% while walking 15.3%. The 20 doubles shows room for power growth long term. And I think the organization as a whole should be able to try to get him to that point. Unlike Aaron Sabato, that was drafted out of UNC, you know, back in, I believe, 2020, this is a guy that could get to good power. I'd say above average power is probably about right, but this is a fantastic hit tool. Good build here. He can play first, he can play third. I like this for the Twins long term.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been one of the really fun people to watch in the College World Series, you know, out of Florida State. He just looks incredibly athletic, very confident, just really fun to watch his at bats so far. So yeah, I love it. I think the Twins just kind of stockpiling some hitters here. Walker Jenkins, Cam Smith, Royce Lewis. It's a fantastic core of hitters there on top of who they already have. As a White Sox fan, I'm very jealous of the Twins and their ability to be consistently good and develop actual players. But, you know, good for them. It's fun. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Love the fit there. And then moving on, 22nd overall, the Baltimore Orioles. On the clock here, the organization that maybe, you know, doesn't even need to pick in this draft. If they just like sat out, they'd be fine. They'd still win, and they'd be set up very well for the future. So this is just an embarrassment of riches. Anything they get is the cherry on top,
right?
But where could they possibly go to improve a part of their farm? Rick, what do you got?
You know, and that was the hardest part for me. I really could not figure it out. I'm going to butcher his name, and I apologize. but my thought process is this. To your point, they are stacked to the gills with talent in the major leagues as well as the minor leagues to this point. So this makes it a little bit tricky for me to be able to figure out where they'll go. But I think I have a solution, and that would be Gerangelo Sigenti. Sigenti, I believe, as totally butchering it. I apologize. He's an ambidextrous pitcher who throws left and throws right out of Mississippi State. Really impressive to watch on the mound. He is coming out of a solid SEC, you know, conference, 5'11", 200 pounds. He struck out 113 batters over 90 and two thirds innings, pitched in 16 games. He walked, he had a walks per nine while finishing with a 3.67 ERA. Now, the control has been an issue in the past. The previous season, he had a 6.1 walks per nine. Okay, so obviously made some major adjustments, solid this year in that regard. But where I think, Jake, that he could be the most used or useful is actually being pushed to be a setup or a closer for the Orioles long term.
Okay.
This is a guy who can throw left. He can throw right. He has some really solid offerings. I think that this could be something that could work really, really well. His fastball sits at 98 and sometimes gets a little bit higher. The sweeping slider is fantastic. It's a hard sweeping slider at 91 miles per hour. So sign me up for that. I think this is a guy that can move through relatively quickly. If he's able to limit the walks whenever he gets drafted, you know, they could keep him as a starter. But I think potentially make him a high leverage reliever could be beneficial for the Orioles long term. Bautista should be back at some point next year, but let's go young. Let's go with it. DL Hall didn't work out, but we could try this way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I like that. And it is, the pronunciation of his last name is actually much more simple than you would expect. I just looked it up. It is Sanja.
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 Mm-hmm. Nice.
Much less syllables than I would have expected.
Yeah.
Those J's. Those J's are tough.
It's pretty brutal. But man, he's great. His name is brutal, but he's great.
Yes, exactly. I'm really curious. I don't know the answer to this, but I would love to know how, if it's possible to keep with the ambidextrous pitching, or if he's eventually just going to kind of give way to his more dominant side. From what we've seen, I don't think there's a major need to do it. But it's just so wild to think. The pitchers and the hitters, the dual players, you know, we've seen Otani do it now, and it's almost we'll still look for the next guys and see what's possible, but that almost seems old news. But the ambidextrous, there was only that one guy on the A's 6 years ago. I can't remember his name, and he wasn't super successful. Didn't do it a whole lot. And it's just, and he throws, you would think ambidextrous pitcher, what does he throw, 90, you know, especially in college. But the fact that he can get up to 97, 98.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. You can't, pinch hit against him.
Right.
Because he's just going to switch. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it just makes it very dangerous. And it just seems like a luxury that the Orioles could, try to see what works with. Right.
Right. Yep.
So if the command goes, then it is what it is. Povich made some major, strides in fixing his command over last year. And so, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to find splits for him, for Sanja, but I cannot find them anywhere. Just to see, lefty righty. But it's such a fun, you really hope he goes in the first round, because love to see the breakdown on him and just see him develop in a good organization, like the Orioles. So that's 22nd overall. Moving on to 23rd overall, another organization that is perennial, the Dodgers. Again, just a wealth of riches, but they will have a draft pick. They will make a choice. And who do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, they do have a wealth of riches. For me, I think that they're going to go high school here. Their major league team is absolutely stacked. And the Dodgers have a good habit of, you know, either getting college or high school talent and moving them for pieces that they can use in their major leagues. They do bring quite a few up to the majors, but they don't hesitate to be able to make moves where it's necessary. And to me, I think Cash Mayfield, a left-handed pitcher out of high school, will be a solid choice for them. Standing at 6'4", 200 pounds, he's throwing from the left side. Mayfield already has two plus pitches to this point to go with plus control. So this is kind of an organization's dream right now, to be able to have two potential plus pitches and plus control. The four-seam fastball sits between 92 and 95, but has been reaching up to 97 with carry up in the zone. While the changeup might be his best offering, coming in at 82 with serious drop, and has helped his fastball play up. And by the way, once again, I think we talked about this last week, high school pitchers with really good changeups, you take note, because typically the changeup is what's lagging, you know, behind in a lot of these high school pitchers. So whenever you see a high school pitcher that's got a very solid two plus changeup, you got to take note of it. The curveball is kind of like a slurvy curveball, comes in at 77 miles per hour. It's effective thanks to its ability to locate the pitch with this command and control. But personally, I believe that the Dodgers could introduce a slider to replace it, or a slider and curveball separate, or cutter, whatever they want to try to work in there. The Dodgers are a great organization to be able to do that. But I think we might be looking at a pitcher that could take several years to get through their system, but could have upside of SP2, SP3 long-term. If they're able to really get the, you know, the slider changeup or slider curveball thing figured out, where he's going long term and how he adjusts to that, I think he could be huge, especially with the size.
Yeah, yeah, love that large left-handed pitcher with a good fastball, good carry. I mean, yeah, that, and like you said, with the high schoolers with good changeups, I mean, that's always a surprisingly tough pitch to develop naturally, and then just to have that kind of baseline going to an MLB organization is awesome. And again, for a team like the Dodgers, who have done very well with pitching development in the past, sounds like a really fun time. So that would be a ton of fun to see him go there. Moving on to the 24th overall selection from the Braves. Rick, where do you think the Braves are going to go here?
Yeah, so this, I think, is going to be a little fun. And I think, Jake, you'll like this quite a bit, because this was a guy you were pretty high on.
Yeah,
Dakota Jordan, man. I think this is a fantastic spot for Dakota Jordan. Outfielder out of Mississippi State. And frankly, I think that this could potentially be the steal of the draft.
Ooh.
If things pan out correctly here with Dakota Jordan, because he's got some massive upside. And what organization is better than, you know, developing massive upside outfielders than the Braves, right? So with Acuña hurt, with his second major knee injury, begging the question if he's going to spend more time long term at DH, was my mode of thinking with this. So this would kind of open up a little bit more of a possibility for some of these outfielders to be able to come through. And Dakota Jordan could be the next best one to come through there. He stands at a solid 6 foot, 220 pounds, sorry. He had a solid season at Mississippi State, playing 63 games, slashing .354, .459, .671 with 20 home runs, 57 runs scored, 72 RBIs and 3 stolen bases. Now, this is a guy that grades out as a plus speed, but has not translated to stolen bases yet. You know, but I'm curious to see if that changes once he becomes a pro and he starts getting established here. But if you look at some of the heavy hitters in college baseball this past year, Dakota Jordan was one of the top ones. And I think that there is a lot of upside here in terms of the power, the speed, the defense is fantastic. If he can continue to hit for average like that in with a major league organization, oh my, this could be something really big here. So I think that the Braves would be an excellent fit for Dakota Jordan long term.
Yeah, I love that. And it's just, you know, in the draft, you pick athleticism and then, you know, maybe do some development down the line. And I mean, just the raw skills, the tools that Jordan has, I mean, it's everything but like an elite contact rate, which in today's game, you could definitely get around with the way that he impacts the ball and just the way he impacts the game on both sides of the ball and his speed and, you know, the power that he has. I mean, it's just, whew, man, it's mm-hmm. fun to see him play and to see him, you know, get a chance in a good organization like the Braves would be awesome. I think he's like, there's a really good chance that he settles somewhere in the 20s here. And the Braves would be a great spot. But I mean, I think he really helped himself out, you know, in what he did see in the tournament and just the way that he's been performing and, you know, like we said, the best conference. And so really cool to see him there. And then moving on to the 25th overall selection for the Padres, who seems to just generate prospects to trade them off. They're of course looking to be buyers again at this deadline. They've been rumored with like a lot of the top guys. The White Sox organization might just become the Padres organization, kind of like the Nationals did. So who's going to be the next person to come up through the org and eventually get traded, Rick?
I mean, I think we're just going to stick to the blueprint that works, right? The Padres do a fantastic job of scouting and recognizing talent that has high upside and letting them do what they need to do in the lower level of the minors and then shipping them off for other pieces. And unfortunately for them, they might be trading away some of the best prospects to be coming up and going into the majors, making a big difference. You know, James Wood talking to you, and many, many more. Mackenzie Gore is coming to his own as well. So, but anyway, for me, I think that they are going to go with the same profile that they've already drafted in the first round a couple of years back. I think they're going to go with Slade Caldwell. He's an outfielder in high school bat here. And he gives me a ton of Robert Hassel vibes.
Ooh, right? Okay.
So this might be, you know, like, you know, because Hassel has had some difficulties, though he's coming around this year. The power has not, but the rest of the numbers and everything else is coming around. But this is a 5'9", 182-pound outfielder. And yes, he might be on the shorter side, but the bat-to-ball skills are fantastic. The speed is elite. Pair that with excellent defensive skills. Caldwell could be a prospect that could hit the ground running. No pun intended. Get all my dad jokes out. And find himself on a different team by the end of the 2025 trade deadline. I always have to throw that in there because I never know how long they're going to last. But Slade Caldwell is going to be very interesting to watch. Personally, I get a lot of David Calabrese vibes. I don't know if you recall him. It was probably 2019, 2020, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Ton of speed, you know, ton of hit tool coming out of Canada, I believe. Very similar profile. Kind of went a little sideways with the Angels, but Caldwell's got a little bit more upside to me long term.
I love that comp. See, when others are comping players to, you know, all-stars and MVPs and Hall of Famers, you decide to comp them to another prospect who I don't know idea who that is. I love it. I love it. If we're going to make comps, let's make them humble comps.
We can only go up from here.
Exactly. Yes. So your expectations should be about that, and then well, anything that comes after that would be fantastic. But no, I mean, you love the profile of a speedy outfielder with an excellent hit tool, and you know, out of high school, so still plenty of time to develop that power. Probably not going to see it for a little bit, but nice upside pick here in the later part of the first round. And then we're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a minute here as we work to finish up the mock draft. We have five more picks left, starting with 26 overall for the Yankees. We're going to give that to you after the break. All right, and we are back and ready to finish up the mock draft series with the final five picks. 26th overall goes to the New York Yankees, who have turned it around significantly this year, looking kind of like the Yankees again. Too bad they're probably not going to pay Juan Soto. So they're, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the organization goes after the GM and owner have cried poor recently. So that'll go over well like a fart in church. Rick! Who are they taking?
That's a great setup. Yeah, so I feel like, you know, who knows what's going to happen long term with DJ LeMahieu. He's kind of showing his declining skills. You know, and they brought up Ben Rice tonight. So that was great. Yeah,
he looked great. I love Ben Rice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too, man. It's great. So I kind of thought a little bit about it, and I'm like, okay, well, if DJ LeMahieu's kind of on his last horse, maybe we can end up going with something with a little bit of util type of deal. And I didn't have to really go too far to think about it. I think that Seaver King, who was a third baseman, outfield, shortstop, second baseman for Wake Forest this past season, and he was a ton of fun to watch. Now, I do not live under the belief that the Yankees won't just buy a third baseman because, you know, that's what they do. But if you look at their minor league system, there's not a lot of great candidates internally. With the flexibility of Seaver King comes to play here. He can play second, shortstop, third, center field, which is what he did at Wake Forest this past year. Like I said, there's excellent defense and plays all the positions. King played 60 games, slashing .308, .377, .577 with 16 home runs, 59 runs scored, 64 RBIs, 11 stolen bases. Along with a good eye at the plate, King has potential double plus speed if he gets to it in an organization that will encourage him to run. Now, I've seen King live a lot this past season with Wake Forest and have been extremely impressed with the plate approach, the speed, and the exit velocities that I've seen with Wake Forest analytics. If you don't follow them on Twitter, please do so because they have excellent numbers out there. Seaver King was popping up almost every single week. Even if it's just a hard hit ball, there is a lot of upside here if a good organization is able to tap into it and get the most out of him. Don't be fooled with the 11 stolen bases. There is a lot of speed here. So I think if the Yankees went this route, this is a guy that can move relatively quickly because, I mean, being from New Jersey, most New Yorkers don't want to wait. I'm a lot more patient than they are, I guarantee you. Yeah, Jake's nodding his head too. So Seaver King is a quick riser up the Yankees organizational ladder. Let's go.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, he's, you know, wherever the Yankees end up having a hole, he could definitely fill that within the next couple of years. And really balanced profile, really, like you said, with those exit velocities, that's always exciting. So really great pick there. And then moving on to the 27th overall pick, the Philadelphia Phillies. Rick, where are the Phillies going to go here?
Oh, man. Whenever I was doing this, I was trying to figure out exactly where the Phillies end up going because their team looks fantastic. They've got a lot of team control guys for several years to come. And actually, while I was writing this for our show notes and everything, JT Realmuto went down with a knee injury. So I was like, oh, man, I mean, this is just absolutely perfect. I was thinking that not perfect for him, obviously, or dynasty owners, managers. Caleb Lamavita, catcher out of California, he had a fantastic season, and I think that this could be a great transitional setup for when JT Realmuto's contract expires. Currently, Realmuto is 33 years old, and his contract expires at the end of the 2025 season. Both catchers have really solid defensive skills, and I think that if he's able to move up through the system, he could potentially end up learning a little bit from Real Muto before he does move on into free agency, which I would expect him to do. When I was looking at the Phillies farm system, the highest upside catching prospect is Eduardo Tiet, I believe. He's just 17 years old, multiple years away. So Lama Vida is 5'11", 200 pounds, potential above average to plus power, as well as a plus arm behind the plate. Really, really solid stuff. In 55 games played at Cal, he slashed .322, .395, .586 with 15 home runs, 51 runs scored, 52 RBIs, and 12 stolen bases. Now, that bat in Citizens Bank Park would be fantastic. His collegiate experience would be able to move him through the system relatively quickly. And honestly, with that little bit of pop and stolen bases with a solid batting average, it reminds me of JT Realmuto whenever he came through Greensboro all those years ago with Miami. So, you know, you don't want to comp these guys to this, but if you're going to learn from a guy that's built and plays the same way, why not? I know Phillies fans might not be wanting a catcher with their first round draft pick, but I think that this would be a really solid long-term piece for you guys to keep your contention window open long-term.
All right. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Catchers in the first round, always interesting. Cause like the ones that were selected last year got like not a lot of love. Kyle Teal a little bit, but it's like if you're a fan of the organization that does that, you're like, ugh. Okay, I guess, fine. It's kind of like picking an offensive lineman in football. In like the first round, you know, you're like, oh, well, he can't run 80 miles an hour and catch or throw touchdown passes. That's ridiculous. But it gets the job done. It builds organizational depth and could be a really savvy pick for the Phillies here at 27th overall. And then the final three picks now, we are getting there. We're very close to finishing up the first round of our MLB mock draft. You have the Houston Astros selecting at 28th overall. It gets tough to predict the last part of the first round here, as just there's so much that goes into these selections. The bonus pool money available, you know, who is still on the board, who has fallen. They're guaranteed there's going to be someone that's available here that we wouldn't have otherwise thought, you know, like, there's going to be so much going on. And so, Rick, if you nail any of these, I'd be extremely impressed. and it sounds like you have a good line on where the Astros might go. Really love to hear that before the pod, but share it with us all now. What is your genius mind concocting here today?
Well, you're giving me a ton of credit there that I don't really sure I deserve, but I will do my best. We were talking before the pod, and I believe that this is the right way to go with this. When looking at the Astros organization, I know things are not going great right now, but they do have some guys locked down long-term. With the needs that they need at this point, there's not a whole lot that fits the mold, like first baseman long-term. They have Bregman. I think they're going to try to keep him long-term. Obviously, they've extended Altuve. Jeremy Pena seems to be doing his thing at shortstop. Your outfield is relatively set forever, more or less, whenever they're going to pay Tucker, probably. So they could go outfield with it, but I think what they need most of all is starting pitching, especially right now. And I just saw Verlander went down with something with the neck, I think stiff neck or something like that. So that doesn't help anything. But I believe that they are going to draft Luke Holman, a right-handed pitcher out of LSU. Okay. In 16 appearances with the Tigers, he ended up pitching 91 and two-thirds innings pitched with 127 strikeouts. That's good for a 12.5 K per nine with a solid 3.2 walks per nine. Finished the year with a 2.75 ERA. Now, Holman is a 6'4", 201-pound right-handed pitcher here with a four-seam fastball that is 94 miles per hour. A slider, which is 82 miles an hour, that is really his bread and butter pitch. He gets a ton of swing and miss with that, and he locates it very, very well. He does work in a 78 mile per hour curveball, as well as sets up a 85 mile an hour changeup that sets up the fastball actually very well with very solid tunneling there. So Luke Coleman is who I'm going with here with the Astros. I think this is a guy that can move relatively quickly out of the SEC, relatively close. I'm sure that they had a ton of scouts there. So it just seems like a very logical pick for them. You know, so I went that route.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that happening. And just, yeah, looking at those, that strikeout to walk ratio, the 2.75 ERA, you know, like we said, in the SEC, in the a league where the average ERA is like around six, and a developed deep arsenal, fastball, slider, curveball, and change, with some room to mess around with it. In the Astros org, we've seen how they've worked with pitchers and introducing new pitches and throwing them in games wherever they fit. And then it really just kind of that development side of it. I mean, for a pitcher who's not getting a ton of attention, probably because of the velocity being about average for a major leaguer, fantastic strikeout rate. I mean, that really pops off the page. Built like a pitcher, has really looked pretty good. So love that pick. Seems very much like the Astros. And then 29th overall goes the Diamondbacks, the runner-up in last year's World Series. Rick, where do you see them going here at the end of the first round?
Yeah, with the Diamondbacks, it was a little tricky because they're really kind of getting their guys in place, and they do have a lot of good minor league depth, too, that they're trying to get up to the majors. One thing I thought, though, that could make a little bit of sense is kind of having a starting pitcher far away and kind of build them the way that they want them and develop them accordingly. Can be very problematic with a lot of the minor league affiliates out west. Sometimes the ball carries, pitching stats are very inflated, but I believe that they could go with Boston Bateman, left-handed pitcher out of high school. This guy is a monster, literally, on the mound as well as in size and appearance. 6'8", 240 pounds. Guys, this is real deal Holyfield right here. Talking about two pitch mix, only two. He only needs two pitches, okay? A fastball that pumps in there at 97 miles per hour and an 80 mile per hour curveball. The curveball is a 1-7 curveball. So, you know, very interesting in his, you know, angle that he's coming in with it, but he desperately needs a third pitch if he's going to remain a starter. Long term, you know, we saw this with Noah Schultz being able to do the fastball slider and the changeup was so-so. Maybe they could be able to try to work him in with a solid changeup, if you will, and then he can be able to climb through that organization to add some pitching depth here in, you know, the next couple of years. And once again, another left-hander pumping in 97. That's fantastic.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That would be so much fun. I think it'll be fun regardless to see where he goes and how he develops. I mean, there's going to be some gold nuggets in the from the high school rankings in this draft in the later part of the first round and going forward, because, you know, with the top half of the draft dominated by those college players, there's going to be some guys that haven't gotten a ton of hype or a ton of attention. They'll kind of hear a bit about, maybe see a breakdown on, you know, the draft coverage and be interested in. And I mean, there's going to be some guys that, from this high school group that rock it up. And there's going to be some really great value. So I think he could absolutely be one of them. I mean, just looking at a 6'8 lefty throwing 97, any org would just be chomping at the bit to get that opportunity to develop that player. So it'll be really interesting to see where he goes and how that ends up working out, but absolutely someone to keep an eye on regardless of where he goes. And then 30th overall, the final pick of the first round, the top 30 picks of the MLB draft. The Texas Rangers is going to have this pick. The defending World Series champions could go a few different directions. Rick, where do you think they're going to go?
Yeah, so I'm going to zig where you're seeing me right now. I'm going in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
For me, I think the Rangers are going to stick with pitching. I think they're going to stick with pitching. And quite frankly, why go out of the state? Just go after Ryan Prager.
Ooh.
Left-handed pitcher out of Texas A&M, and that guy has been fantastic. Just recently didn't give up a hit until the seventh inning in one of his outings, in which that him and his pitching coach were just giggling back and forth. That was pretty hilarious. They thought it was funny. I did too. He is 6'3", 200 pounds, left-handed pitcher. He features a fastball, slider, changeup, and also has like pinpoint control. which has done him very, very well this season. He usually sits between 90 to 93 miles per hour, but it has ticked up a bit this year. He missed the entire season, I believe, in 2023. Yeah, 2023, he missed the entire season. He also features a low 80 slider, usually around 82 miles per hour. And he has a low 80s changeup. So it's between 82, 83, 84, right in that range. But this past year, while at Texas A&M, he ended up making 17 appearances in which that he pitched 87 innings, striking out 114 batters. That's good for a 11.8 K per nine, walked only two per nine, and finished the season with a solid 3.10 ERA in the SEC, an extremely difficult competition conference to be able to pitch in. So I think with the Rangers, go in your state, draft in there. This is a left-handed pitcher that might not be a front of the rotation type of arm in the majors long term, but I think that this could be a very solid middle to back end of the rotation, and that is some major value whenever you're literally picking 30th in the first round. So Prager is who I'm going with here. I think it would be a solid call.
I love that. I love the pivot that you did live on camera, because that is not who Rick has written down in the outline here. And I was actually, if you had gone with the original guy, I was going to have you talk about him anyway, about Prager, because we had talked about him before the podcast, and it sounded like you were just really tickled pink about it. And I think we've talked about it. You know, you have those guys that don't have the incredible results, you know, in the college level, but have really good arsenal makeup stuff that organizations love to take and mold. And we've seen guys be really successful in that have been really great values in the draft. And so this would absolutely be a situation like that. Not exactly, I think, where a lot of like rankings or predictions would have him. He'd probably be more of like a second round pick to get that value. But I mean, like, he's someone who could return first round value regardless, and looking at what he has done and what he is able to do. I think it'd be a really fun pick for the Rangers to just go and grab that college pitcher instead of playing with the who's going to fall and what are you going to do and what are you going to do with the slot. Just go grab that guy that can be an impact arm for you pretty soon. So love to see that, especially for the Rangers, who have a pretty old and oft injured pitching staff. And so they're going to need a new wave of talent coming through.
Of course. And to be fair to the listeners, I will tell you the person that I did have written down here, because I feel like that is fair. They could go this route too, but I think going in-state with Prager makes more sense. I originally had Jacob Cozart, catcher for NC State. I know everybody's yelling, Jonah Heim, why would you bother? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got to be prepared, right? And Cozart was very, very solid. One of the best catching prospects that's in this draft class. This past year, he ended up slashing 308, 436, 606 with 19 home runs, 60 runs scored, 54 RBIs. Last season with the Wolfpack, he ended up slashing 301, 392, 546, 10 home runs, 39 runs scored, 54 RBIs. So he's getting better year over year. And this is something that I think that could be translated very well once he is in an organization. It would have worked well with the Rangers, still could work well with the Rangers. But go Prager. That's fun. That's great. Yeah. He's pitching so good right now. His stock is going to be going up. So, yeah, where he would have been a second-round pick, no doubt, I think he will sneak into the first round with his performance, you know, right now. And that's why it's so important to try to watch these tournament times.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it just, it impacts, we see it every year, you know, it impacts so much what the draft stock for these players. So that does it, y'all. That is 30 picks, 30 predictions from us at PL on the Farm. And, you know, it's been an awesome project to do this. And actually am kind of annoyed because now I have to wait a month for the actual draft to happen, because I am just really rearing and ready to go for it to see exactly how this is going to play out. So can't wait for that. And hopefully y'all feel the same after this series of episodes. We'll be back next week to start a new topic. Talk about things that we've been noticing happening this season, different players who have increased their potential and are starting to break out a little bit. So you can catch that episode next Friday, June 21st and June 28th. This will publish on June 21st. There we go. Yeah. And you can find me on Twitter at Jake Mache, Rick at Must Be the Hawk. And you can find the podcast, of course, at PL on the Farm. Thank you all so much for listening, for tuning in this week. And of course, have yourselves a great baseball week.